Merry Christmas. Once upon a time, there was no Christmas. Not just once upon a time before Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but also once upon a time for more than 300 years in the history of the church, the Jesus movement. There was no Christmas. Not because of some big meanie somewhere or some sinister something, but rather because Christmas hadn't been invented yet. The major feast, the primary festival for the early Christians was Easter, the feast of the resurrection. It was celebrated with great devotion and joy. But there was no feast, no festival celebrating the birth of Jesus the Christ. There was no Christmas. What changed? A few things, actually. In the 4th century, the status of the religion called Christianity changed a few times with respect to the Roman Empire. It went from persecuted minority religious group to legally tolerated religion, to the religion of the emperor himself, to the official religion of the empire. A lot of change in a short time. Christian merchants and Christian missionaries traveled all over the Roman Empire and beyond, taking Christianity with them. In all the areas north of the Alps, these Roman Christians encountered the Celtic world, which extended from Ireland all the way to northern Turkey. People living in those more northern places of the Celtic world paid a lot of attention to the sun. As summer turned to fall and then winter started to come on, they passed through longer and longer and colder nights. The time nearest to the winter solstice was the most difficult and dangerous part of the year. The time farthest away, both from the autumnal harvest and the beginning of spring. The sun was invisible for many long hours out of every 24. They knew the cold and dark were necessary for the earth to be renewed, but even though eventually the nights would get shorter and the weather would get warmer every year, they were always anxious that one year the sun might not return. The many different Celtic tribes and nations, each in their own way, developed lots of ritual practices for this time of year around the winter solstice, invitations for the sun to return. They decorated oak trees bare of their leaves. They hung dried fruits in the bare branches. They ate lots of the kinds of food that would keep them warm through this coldest, darkest time. Those that were hale and healthy took food and other supplies to the sick, the shut-in, the elderly, the widows, and the orphans to make sure they would make it through until spring. There was a lot of eating and drinking and sharing and giving stuff to one another. Sound familiar? When Christians encountered these Celtic peoples, they observed all these practices. They understood that for the Celts, the winter solstice was hugely important. They didn't try to talk them out of it. They saw the goodness of God and the care people showed one another. They saw, as the Celts did themselves, divine revelation in the first incarnation of God, which is in the creation, the cosmos. And they said, we know this truth too, and we have something to add. You are waiting for the sun, S-U-N, to be reborn, and we are telling you that the sun, S-U-N, of righteousness has been born. a baby has been born who changes everything. Even more direct, even more personal than the incarnation in creation, in the cosmos, is the incarnation of God in human form, Jesus the Christ. Because the divine became human, we humans can experience the divine intimately. Over time, these Christians and Celts created the Feast of Christmas, the festival of the Nativity. They didn't try to stomp out the old solstice practices and customs. They added to them. And the keeping of the Feast of Christmas spread all over, and many varieties of Christians all over the place celebrated Christmas in this both-and kind of way. Many of the older feasting, gifting, celebrating customs developed in observing the solstice partnered with this new understanding, this new dimension of the joy brought to the world by the babe of Bethlehem. Different cultures developed and shared different Christmas traditions, and there was a lot of Christmas goodness for a long, long time. And then in the 17th century, in England, the Puritans, a minority group of Anglicans, and we're Episcopalians and we're Anglicans, but this is not us. The Puritans took power in England, and those folks really gave the Grinch a run for his money. They canceled Christmas in England for almost 20 years, starting in 1647. And you know what happened? The people rioted. The Christmas ban led to a rebellion and ultimately to a second English Civil War. People wanted Christmas. The Puritans in the Massachusetts Bay Colony on our side of the Atlantic did the same thing. They banned Christmas in Massachusetts from 1659 until 1681. Stop having fun and get back to work was basically the message. When Massachusetts joined other colonies in the Confederation of New England, the presence of European immigrants from all over the place led to a return of Christmas. But it wasn't really a thing in New England for a long time. In the Great Revival that swept the South at the turn of the 19th century, a renewed interest in Christmas welled up among Protestants and Catholics as well. The Southland is where Christmas in our country really got going. Over time, folks farther north began to get their Christmas on as well. In 1822, the year Key West was founded, up in New York City, an Episcopal priest named Clement Moore, who was a professor at the General Seminary of the Episcopal Church, wrote a Christmas poem for his own children, describing a visit from St. Nicholas. The next year it was published. We know it most often as The Night Before Christmas. And in 1843, inspired by the horrible conditions faced by so many English children living in poverty, Charles Dickens wrote and published his classic Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. And 179 years later, Dickens, through the voice of Ebenezer Scrooge, continues to urge all of us to honor Christmas in our hearts and try to keep it every day. And in between Clement Moore's poem in 1822 and Charles Dickens' story about Mr. Scrooge in 1843, on Christmas Day of 1832, 190 years ago tomorrow, at the Monroe County Courthouse, the first ever service of this congregation was held. Christmas Day. And later that day, the congregation signed the papers that created and named this St. Paul's Episcopal Church of Key West. So happy birthday, St. Paul's. 190 years young. So you can rest assured that Christmas will never be canceled here. No hurricane, fire, war, economic depression, or recession has stopped this congregation from gathering, and not even worldwide pandemics have prevented the people of St. Paul's from somehow keeping Christmas together and sharing it with everyone who wants to join us, reaching all the way back to the beginnings of the Feast of Christmas, we can still see that communities need to come together to take care of one another, not only at the winter solstice, but all year round. And the value add of the Christian message is this: we don't have to take care of one another only on our own power. The divine power at work in the creation, in the cosmos, is also at work in us, and even more. The power and love of the Creator abide with us forever because of the coming of Jesus the Christ, God in human form, Emmanuel, God with us. At St. Paul's, not only do we celebrate Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, we celebrate all the days of this feast right up until the day of the Epiphany, January 6th, and beyond these 12 or 13 days of Christmas, depending on how you count, we celebrate and seek to do the work of Christmas all year round. And what is that? In the words of the mystic Howard Thurman, the work of Christmas is to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among others, to make music in the heart. If you are local and you're looking for a place to do that work, come join us. There's room for you here. If you're visiting and you're looking for a place to plug in, try an Episcopal congregation near where you live. And if tonight you're not sure about all that, but you know you could use some good tidings of comfort and joy, you've come to the right place. Christmas points not backward to a day in the past, but forward to today and tomorrow and all the days to come, reminding us that life itself is a nativity play. Most likely, each of us will wind up playing every part sooner or later. In every age, in every community, there are people barely getting by, like the shepherds. There are people in all kinds of compromising and preposterous circumstances, not necessarily of their own making, like Mary and Joseph. There are newborns, like Jesus, who need proper care. There are people like the Holy Family without adequate shelter. There are people who are tired of the long nights and hard times that come to all of us eventually in this life. And Christmas Day, 3 days past the longest night, is the first day when the human eye can first detect a lengthening of day, an increase of light after the winter solstice. And on this day, even amidst hardship and ongoing struggle, loss and trauma, unmet goals and misunderstandings, and even amidst war among nations, we are invited by angels to a party in the dark, where we are reminded that the deepest dark is a place where fresh radiance begins. Always. Here we can remember that goodwill, love, and beauty not only have their place, they also have life-giving, life-altering power. And ultimately, goodwill, beauty, and love will always, always win. Amen.